Arizona Sports, the local sports leader. Bickley and Marotta Mornings.
Phoenix Suns were not good enough in the second round to beat Denver. And the two games they won required Kevin Durant and Devin Booker to do absolutely historic things offensively, yeah. And they barely won both games. And I don't really care what Frank Vogel does with their defense. They have to find ways to upgrade this roster this summer when they're not going to have access to the tax MLE, probably, if they get up that high. They have to figure out what they're doing with DeAndre Ayton. They have to figure out what they're doing with Chris Paul. And they have to find ways to add talent to this roster with no trade assets, really. So it's going to be a very challenging line to walk there to get enough talent on this roster to make it good enough to compete with Denver and these other elite teams in the West. Because, like I said, you saw in that second round series, as clear as day, Denver ain't going anywhere.
That's Tim Bontemps from the Hoop Collective podcast talking about the challenges the Suns have, and I think he's right on the money there. And all of this has to do, it starts with roster construction questions and discussions. We'll start with two names until something is done or not done with them, and that is DeAndre Ayton and Chris Paul. And mm-hmm. they're very, very, very heavy questions. Because I got to tell you, Bick, you know me, I've been a DeAndre Ayton supporter. My frustration grew with him to all-time highs this past season. There's no doubt about it. I don't think DeAndre Ayton is a lost cause. Now, my opinion doesn't matter. What does matter is the opinion of Frank Vogel, the opinion of the coaching staff, and something that you've touched on since the Suns have been eliminated in the playoffs, and that is, what are the rest of the people in the organization, the teammates and the front office feel about DeAndre Ayton?
Yeah. Yeah. And I think the latter is the new element in the story, Vinny, because I think that if the team, if the players are like, no, there's just, we can't win with this guy in high leverage situations, then what are you doing here? Of course, DeAndre Ayton's not a lost cause, but can you keep him at that salary if he's continuing to not exceed or meet expectations? Now, when you can use that maybe to get those assets from elsewhere. That's where I'm at. I'm in the latter camp because I don't think a new head coach, for all of Frank Vogel's defensive acumen, I don't think anything is going to change who DeAndre is as a finesse-first basketball player. And sure, I'm sure you can find a role for him. And I'm sure he's a great guy to have on a team. You can't afford that number for expectations that are not met, especially if you don't trust a guy to give it his all in the playoffs. Yeah. That's to me, I think that's the new element in the story.
The other part of it is what we've talked about, what a lot of other people have talked about. The Suns were not good enough in that series against Denver. The reality of it is the roster probably wasn't good enough in the Clippers series either. They just ran up against a team that they matched up well against and was shorthanded from an injury standpoint. Depth is an issue. Getting contributions from role players on a consistent basis was an issue for the 2023 Phoenix Suns. That needs to be addressed. How do you best address that? Probably by trading DeAndre Ayton and getting two or three players in return and maybe a draft pick.
Yes, that's why I think you have to go that route because even though there is a narrative now that the Phoenix Suns were not good enough last year, and certainly the results back that up, they certainly were good enough when Devin Booker was cooking and Kevin Durant was playing close to Kevin Durant basketball. When those two guys kind of had it locked in, they were plenty good enough.
Yes.
It didn't seem to matter who was around them. But when both of those guys were mitigated, muted a little bit, that's when it became an issue.
It's not realistic to count on Devin Booker to score 45 points a night.
Of course not.
It's not realistic.
Or play 40 minutes a game.
Yes, and it's not realistic to expect the same from Kevin Durant. I mean, we've seen kind of a similar trajectory in this year's playoffs with a team that's still alive and Jimmy Butler.
Mm-hmm.
Jimmy Butler's come down to earth. He's been good. Although I don't think he was even great in game two, and the Heat won that game, but he played at superhuman levels. You can't continue that night in, night out.
No.
And the other narrative that when they first made the Durant trade, everybody was saying, well, this offseason, the veteran stars are going to be fighting each other to try to get to play with the Suns. They're going to want to take, you know, veteran minimum deals just so they could play with Booker and Durant. There's a lot of stars in the NBA right now, and there's a lot of good teams. I don't think the Suns necessarily stand out that they're going to have free agents running towards them any more than other teams.
You might find some of it, but I tend to agree with you, Jared. I don't think there's going to be a flood of guys that saying, you know what, I'll give up all that money to try to compete for a championship, because it's not a foregone conclusion the Suns are going to win a championship. I think we saw that in the early stages of super teams, where you saw these teams come together, especially that first one in Miami with LeBron and Chris Bosh and Dwayne Wade. You saw players like flocking to Miami to be part of that and taking those minimum deals because they knew what that meant. And they were right. 4 straight finals appearances, 2 championships. It's not the same landscape in today's NBA.
Yeah.
It's just too much competition.
So when you get outside of Devin Booker and Kevin Durant, you start prioritizing what are the team's needs here? A knockdown shooter, yes. An active big, active being the key word, yes. Defensive wing, yes. Well, how are we prioritizing what the needs are here?
Maybe a bigger forward defender. I mean, Kevin Durant is kind of a unicorn, but the Suns didn't have really any length outside of Ayton and Durant. I mean, who's going to be the Aaron Gordon of that team? Who's going to guard the Michael Porter Juniors of that team?
Especially under this Frank Vogel system.
Yeah.
But they're going to need a 3-point shooter you can depend on. A guy
two or three or four.
They're going to need point guard, backup point guard. Like what are they going to do? Is Campaign still the guy behind Chris Paul? If they keep Chris Paul, like that's a big thing.
Yeah. In that same podcast, Tim McMahon talked about the possibilities of DA and Chris Paul.
It's been well chronicled, the headbutting between DeAndre Ayton and Monty Williams, but by no stretch do I believe that Monty Williams' departure makes it much more likely for DeAndre Ayton to still be in Phoenix next season. I still am pretty sure DeAndre Ayton will be traded this summer. You know, they've got a decision to make on Chris Paul. I think that one is certainly more likely for Chris Paul to be back, but they need to understand, you know, what their potential options are. There as well. You know, obviously Chris Paul is still a very good player, but at 38 years old, if they could somehow turn him into a couple of quality role players, I think that'd be something that they would have to seriously consider.
Yeah, I'm not sure how possible that would be. You might have to turn some magic tricks to make that happen. Because again, there's a very, very, if there's interest in Chris Paul around the league, that's a very short list of teams. Because of his age, because of the situations that they would be in as an organization. And are you know, if you're close, are you giving up key role players to get a Chris Paul? Probably not.
And is there a team that is appealing to Chris Paul? Because I think the Suns owe him a little respect in that regard. But then again, you could have Chris Paul and his people kind of seek some stuff out themselves and see what happens. I do agree. And the sad thing here is, from what I can tell, Suns fans are ready to turn the page on Chris Paul. And maybe competitively, they are right. Maybe that is the move. Like I said before, I don't want him to go out with that kind of shroud over him. Because he was that important to the Phoenix Suns. You would really have to thread the needle to find the place where he would be cool with going, so he's going to bring them their best and they can give you a couple of pieces in return. Yeah, I agree with you. I think that sounds good in theory. I don't know if they're going to be able to pull that off. But not at all.
And, I mean, you start to talk about possibilities if Chris Paul is back. How do you manage his workload? And he's had a big say in that, but I think it's, you know, when you had 3 straight playoffs marred by injury or illness or something, something needs to be done.
Well, something was done last year, and he got injured regardless. Yeah. So I don't know. What do you do?
That's
do you play him all the time? Do you not play him at all? I don't know.
Keep him on the shelf till the All-Star break. He's a practice player until February. Coming up next, is Kyrie Irving trying to recruit LeBron James to Dallas? And if so, how does Luka feel about that? We'll get into it next. It's Bickley and Murata Mornings here on Arizona Sports, the local sports leader.
Bickley and Murata Mornings. Arizona Sports, the local sports leader.
Tuesday edition of Bickley and Murata Mornings, live from the Ock Chin Community Studios. Stan Bickley, Vince Murata, Jared Carlin, Sarah Cazell with you until 10 o'clock today. There's major news happening in the golf world.
Yeah. Yes, there is.
Two worlds coming together. We're going to get into that in the Rush Hour reboot in just a little bit. The details are very new, or there's very few, and it's a very new story, but could be an earth-shattering golf story. Could be an earth-shattering basketball story. Yesterday, it was reported that Kyrie Irving, a soon-to-be free agent of the Dallas Mavericks, is doing some recruiting to LeBron James, seeking any information if LeBron would be willing to come to Dallas to join Kyrie Irving and Luka Doncic. I mean, the three salaries there would eat up all of the salary cap for Dallas. Getting LeBron at this stage of his career out of L.A. with all of his entertainment interest, I think, would be next to impossible. And you have to wonder, Bick, if Kyrie can't pull this off, what does that mean? Because the Lakers don't necessarily want to sign Kyrie Irving, according to the report. So what does that mean for Kyrie Irving in Dallas?
Yeah, I don't know. But again, since when is Kyrie Irving calling shots in Dallas? This is Luka's team.
Yes, it is.
So I'm not buying any of this.
Yeah, I imagine... And you brought this up, that you had heard through some circles that Luka got to the point of already being fed up with Kyrie Irving.
Yes, and I think Wolf has heard the same thing from somebody, because it was told to me that if you go back and look where the Mavericks just decided in the middle of a play-in run, nope, we're done. We're pulling the plug on this year. We're tanking the rest. We're sitting everybody. And you remember that?
They were like one game out.
Yeah.
And with two games left.
And Jason Kidd would face the media and they're like, Jay, what's up with this? Hey, it's not my decision, man. It's beyond me.
And then fast forward a couple months and you got a team that was in the play-in tournament playing for an NBA championship and tied at 1-1.
In the Miami Heat. So exactly. So to me, what it was explained to me was Luka went from embracing the idea of having a guy like Kyrie to be the 1B to I'm not spending another minute of my career with this dude. Now, I don't know if that's true, but it explains what happened in Dallas at the end of last year very neatly. So whether Kyrie Irving is honestly trying to talk Mark Cuban into getting LeBron James, or whether Kyrie is just being Kyrie.
How possibly could they get LeBron James, though?
How could they get LeBron James?
Unless they traded Luka.
Yeah, well, that's one way. That would be one way to get it done. The Lakers would sign up for that in a second.
But if you're the Mavericks, you've got your golden ticket in Luka Doncic. Why would you do that?
The Mavericks also chose to bring in Kyrie Irving.
Yeah,
that was
dumb.
Those were all. They've done a series of desperation moves to try to make Luka happy before, you know, he becomes a free agent before he starts to get unhappy. You know, Kristaps Porzingis thing was the first one, and then it was Kyrie Irving. They're trying to make this work with Luka to get him another star so that he's happy and nothing bubbles up.
I don't think the Kristaps Porzingis thing was that much of a reach. I like that move
in the
moment. Time for Dallas, even though Porzingis had some injury history. They rolled the dice. It didn't work. The Kyrie Irving thing was ridiculous, especially for a team that got to the Western Conference Finals, and a lot of it was based on that chemistry that they had together. When you give up players like Spencer Dinwiddie and Dorian Finney-Smith, those were big parts of what Dallas did.
And they already lost Jalen Brunson.
So I think what Kyrie is doing, because I don't think Kyrie has any authority at all to be recruiting to Dallas. I think what Kyrie is doing is either poking and prodding the Lakers, because the Lakers don't want to sign Kyrie. Like, okay, well, then I'm going to steal your guy. Or he's just taunting Mark Cuban to deal him, to get him out of there. This is Luka Doncic's team, and Kyrie Irving is trying to reshape the roster?
Well, I'm also wondering...
That to me, if you're Luka and you didn't like Kyrie yesterday, you really don't like him today. Like, dude, this is true. My team.
But
turf.
Is this also Kyrie examining his own future in Dallas by saying, hey, if LeBron comes here, if we can make that happen, I'd re-sign here. If not, I'm out. I'm out the door. I'm an unrestricted free agent. I would find it. I mean, Dallas reportedly wants him back. I don't.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I guess after you trade your team for him, you have to make an effort, because that would go down as the worst rental in NBA history. you bring in a multi-time All-Star and a champion like Kyrie Irving, and you don't even make the play-in tournament?
I know. Well, again, they also tapped out on it. They didn't give it full effort down the stretch. So I think this is yet another example of just really, you'd have to really be blinded by individual talent to look at Kyrie Irving and go, that's the missing piece. Where has that been the case? Other than a great Game 7 in Cleveland.
Well, go back to after the trade deadline when Kyrie went to Dallas, and there had been those rumors and a lot of smoke coming out of Los Angeles that maybe the Lakers were going to do it. The Lakers made some really prudent moves at the deadline that totally turned around their season. But LeBron James went on record. He did an interview where he talked about being disappointed that they weren't able to get Kyrie Irving. He talked about their past chemistry together, how strong it was. That's the only time there's been that, you know, teammate chemistry. Mm-hmm. And that was, you know, it wasn't the same version of Kyrie in Cleveland. He was not nearly as difficult a star in his Cleveland days as he's become since then.
Because think about it, the last time he was consistently great on the court, where he could stay on the court and didn't have, was with Boston. And things were so bad there that they didn't even want him, even though the team did well and he did well. Like that was where he sort of, when he finally got his own team,
mm-hmm.
that's when he sort of evolved into whatever word you want to call a diva or just a difficult kind of star. But, and ever since then, we know what happened in Brooklyn.
Yeah, I wonder what LeBron's reaction was to that. But I'd love to know what, like you said, I'd love to know what's going through Luka's head today.
Yeah, again, I would think he's probably laughing at the gall of Kyrie Irving. And again, this is, you would say, how does Kyrie Irving not have the self-awareness? But that's a dumb question. That question answers itself.
Yeah, self-awareness escaped him long ago.
Yeah, a long time ago.
Luka's somewhere saying, What?
Text your thoughts to the FanDuel text line at 620-620 right now. Coming up next, we'll get you rebooted, the Rush Hour reboot, the big stories of the day presented by Sarah Cazell here on Bickley and Murata Mornings. Arizona Sports, the local sports leader.
Arizona Sports, the local sports leader. Rush Hour Reboot. Rush Hour Reboot. Getting you up to speed on everything happening in sports this morning. Brought to you by Brooklyn Betting. Arizona built for America's dreams.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome into the Rush Hour Reboot here on Bickley and Murata Mornings. We are starting off with a shocker of a news story. I'm Sarah Cazell, taking you through everything you need to know with Dan Bickley.
Hello.
With Vince Murata. Yep.
Love it.
And Jarrett Carlin.
I just love the game of golf so much, and I just want to grow the game of golf, and live is the future of golf.
Oh, is that right, Greg Nolman? I assume that's who that was.
It was.
All right. Fascinating news coming down about 30 minutes ago. The PGA Tour and the LIV Golf Tours are merging. The European World Tour is going to be part of that as well. CNBC reported about 30 minutes ago that billions of dollars will come from Saudi Arabia's PIF, the Public Investment Fund, to help develop this new golf entity, which has not been named yet. The PGA Tour, the LIV Tour, and the DP Tour put out a joint announcement that says all involved parties have signed an agreement to combine all of their commercial business and rights to create this for-profit entity. The statement says this move ensures that everyone benefits from a model that delivers maximum excitement and competition among the game's best players. What that also does is it puts an end to all lawsuits, all pending litigation among all of the different parties. No more legal battles in the world of golf. Just to refresh your guys' memory, last year in a legal filing, the PGA Tour claimed that LIV Golf is paying its players astronomical sums of money to breach their contracts and, quote, sports wash the recent history of Saudi atrocities. Bick, no one's been more critical than you have of the LIV Tour and its ethical issues. And now the people of the PGA Tour will directly benefit from that money as well.
Yeah, the PGA Tour has got significant amounts of egg on their face, and they've got a lot of explaining to do, because it wasn't that long ago that the PGA Tour was claiming moral high ground, moral indignation against Saudi Sovereign Fund and LIV Golf, and now they're in business with them. That's very, very interesting. Can't have that both ways. So this feels like a shotgun arrangement, if you will. And you mentioned in your update the lawsuits. This is at the root of it. There were antitrust lawsuits going on between these parties. There was discovery. There were people who were going to have to get on the witness stand. There was all sorts of uncomfortable outcomes for both sides in this thing. I did not think it was going to end like this. And I still don't know what this is going to look like.
No.
But I'll tell you what, the friction between the guys on the PGA Tour, with a few exceptions. There are a few guys who are on LIV that the guys on the PGA Tour don't mind. Brooks Koepka, Dustin Johnson, to name a couple. But there's a lot of bad feelings still. That's not going away with this. And this is just... I just can't believe the PGA Tour. It'll be curious to see how they try to spin this.
Yeah, that was my first thought, too. You used the word egg on the face. This is a total, in my opinion, at first glance, without knowing all the details, a total loss for the PGA Tour. I mean, how long has LIV been at this? A year?
They technically started in 21, yeah.
And able to force a merger this early into it? And there's so many logistical questions, like what happens to these unbelievable fees that were being paid by LIV to these golfers just to come over and make that jump? How does that affect the players that didn't jump to LIV? I mean, what's Rory McIlroy think about all this?
Oh, yeah, right. for the limbs and for the work that he has done. Jay Monahan is the guy that's really going to have to wear this, because he's been the one that's been in full frontal attack against LIV, rallying his players against them. Now your business partners?
Right.
Wow. Wow.
Are the fans that were disgusted by LIV Tour, now that they're in bed with the PGA Tour, how do the fans react?
I don't know. Does this lead to another offshoot golf outfit? Another golf tour started up by the guys that are fed up with all this? Man, this is a mess.
Mm-hmm. A couple statements from this larger announcement from Jay Monahan. You just mentioned the PGA Tour commissioner. Quote, after 2 years of disruption and distraction, this is a historic day for the game we all know and love. And then a statement from the Saudi fund governor, Yasir Al-Rumayyan. Quote, we are committed to unifying, promoting, and growing the game of golf around the world and offering the highest quality product to the many millions of fans globally while cultivating new fans. So it's a lot of happy, happy, joy, joy in this announcement.
Mark Schlabaugh, in his piece on ESPN, said one PGA Tour player reached by ESPN on Tuesday, quote, no blanking way. Yeah, that's this funny. Is going to go smoothly, I think.
Yeah. All right, let's move on to a merger that Suns fans are maybe a little bit more comfortable with. David Fizdale coming to Frank Vogel's staff. Probably most basketball fans remember him best as the head coach of the Grizzlies and the Knicks, but he was an assistant to Frank Vogel in L.A. for the 21-22 season and spent a long time as an assistant in Miami when James Jones was playing there. Now, George Sedano of ESPN and ESPN L.A., he was on Burns and Gambo yesterday to talk about the Fizdale-Vogel connection that he saw in Los Angeles.
You know, this is a move for Fiz, despite just tripling his salary, as you mentioned. I think the fact that there's familiarity, and let's face it, guys, regardless of what line of work you're doing, you want to work with people that you have commonality with, but that you have an actual relationship with, because it allows you, in theory, to be able to have honest conversations as much as you need to, right? And nobody's going to get offended or whatnot because there's a history between the parties. So I think that makes all the sense in the world.
Right. And after the Lakers fired Vogel and his staff last year, Fizdale actually landed with the Utah Jazz in their front office. But as Sedano mentioned, you heard him say triple the salary. Our John Gambadoro reports that the Suns will pay Fizdale somewhere in the realm of $1.3 to $1.5 million to re-pivot back to the coaching side of basketball. And sticking with Sedano's conversation on Burns and Gambo yesterday, he said Suns fans have to be thrilled with Matt Ishbia's throw all the money at it approach.
I mean, listen, he's putting his money where his mouth is, right? And that's all you can ask for. If you're a fan of the Phoenix Suns, you can't ask for any more. I know that, like, I look at owners like Mark Cuban, right? I know a lot of people have a lot of different things to say about Mark Cuban, but I would say this. If I was a Dallas Mavs fan, I'd be thrilled that Mark Cuban was my owner, because you know he's going to do everything he can to put a winner on the floor. It doesn't always work out that way, because that's how sports works. but you're not going to have to worry about that part of it. I mean, the worst thing you can have in sports is the combination of an owner who's incredibly meddlesome and also thrifty at the same time. So,
Bernsey's knowing laugh there. Meddlesome and thrifty. Does that sound familiar? What do you guys think about the addition of David Fizdale plus Matt Ishbia's willingness to spend as they build this new staff?
Yeah, I think that it's just it's a continuation of a very encouraging storyline of paying the cost to win, which is something that has not been seen around here very, very often among our sports owners. And yeah, I think that comparison is right. When you get a meddlesome owner who is wealthy and free spending, it's a lot different than a meddlesome miser.
The Meddlesome Misers. Good name for a band. I like the construction of this coaching staff. I'm real curious to see, again, how many holdovers there will be. Maybe we'll get some questions answered at the press conference today at noon. But now you've got, a guy who's won an NBA title heading the thing up. You've got the top assistant coach from last year with his relationships intact to the players who will be back on this team. He's back. You got another experienced NBA assistant slash head coach. He's got front office experience as well. I love what they're doing right now. I think it's very exciting.
Yeah, I think a lot of Suns fans feel that way as well.
Yeah, there we go. We're all rebooted. Thank you, Sarah. Rebooted. Rush Hour Reboot every morning at 7:30. Coming up next, the first place Arizona Diamondbacks starting a road trip in Washington against the Nationals. We'll talk some D-backs baseball with Jody Jackson from Bally Sports Arizona. Straight ahead here on Bickley and Murata Mornings, Arizona Sports, the local sports leader.
Bickley and Murata. Arizona Sports, the local sports leader. Bickley and Murata Mornings.
D-backs start a road trip in Washington today against the Nationals. That trip will also take them to Detroit. And joining us here on the Arizona Sports Line to talk some D-backs baseball from Bally Sports Arizona, Jody Jackson, our guest here on Bickley and Murata Mornings. Jody, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, guys. I'm doing great. How are you?
Hello, Jody.
How is the nation's capital treating you?
It has been fantastic. The weather is great. I know it's not too bad there. You know, now it's kind of heating up in Arizona. So I always kind of enjoy, a little run in the air here. But we had a great Capitol tour yesterday.
Nice.
Derek Hall, Jackie Brown, and then Representative Juan Ciscomani gave us a tour of the Capitol. And there were a couple players there. Corbin Carroll was one of them, and just some staff and the broadcasters. So it was really cool. It's kind of an after hours tour.
Yeah. I had heard that they were doing that yesterday, and I thought that's not a bad idea to try to get past that real painful Sunday loss to the Braves that just kind of was really a kick right in the stomach. Your thoughts on turning the page on that and getting back on the winning track?
Yeah, they've been pretty good at that, Dan, which is good. I mean, and you do have the off day. We got in a little bit late, but you can kind of, it's baseball, so you do turn the page pretty quick. They were upset, I think. There was no question Sunday afternoon after that game. They all knew that the spotlight was on them against the Braves and, kind of a barometer for where they stand. And those guys feel like they should have won the series. And as you all know by watching the game, they were very close to doing that. Miguel Castro just missed on a pitch, and Eddie Rosario was hot coming into that. I think he was something like 10 for 20, coming into that at bat, or I might be wrong on that, but basically batting about 500. And he made a mistake there. So, I think they kind of look at that and say, we actually feel pretty good about how we played in those games until that last moment. And so ready to turn the page against the Nats in Detroit. And again, they feel they don't take anybody for granted. I mean, yes, the Nationals and the Tigers both have records that don't match up with the D-backs. D-backs are still in the lead with the Dodgers. And the Dodgers have actually lost on the same days as the Diamondbacks lately, which hasn't happened all the time in the last few years. So they feel like they're still in a very good spot here on June 6th, and they know they just need to keep pushing forward.
Yeah, Jody Jackson, Bally Sports Arizona, our guest here on Bickley and Murata Mornings. You've been covering this team for quite some time, Jody, and you've seen good versions of the Diamondbacks, and you've been around the not-so-good versions of the Diamondbacks. And Bick and I have talked about this. There seems to be a vibe with this team that is uncommon. I would love to get your perspective on that and how you've been able to pick up on what's different about the vibe this year with this Diamondbacks team.
Yeah, I mean, it's a vibe that actually has come to me in some ways from Torrey Lovello over the years, because, you know, he first came in, as you guys know, I mean, he won Manager of the Year the first year. And that was a good vibe, too, even though much more veteran team. He didn't have to necessarily push those guys quite as hard. Then they go through the dark times. He's always been great with young players. And so the vibe is always positive around this team. There's never a doom and gloom feel because the staff, starting with Torrey, kind of has that ability. And then you've got guys now that are, you know, frankly, just living up to expectations. And they go about their process in a really professional way, even though they are young. And so it's a fun group. They pull for each other. And then a topic, you guys, I know you've talked about it the last couple of years, too, is a lot of them have come up through the system together. And so they do have, they're having fun out there. And we had a shot of Corbin Carroll, actually, after he made one of the catches. He had a spectacular catch on Friday and then another one on Saturday. And he kind of came up from the catch and just was, like, so fired up, kind of, like, letting out a primal scream and, like, flexing. And it was just, you just watch him and you watch some of these guys and, like, they are just having fun. They're living their dreams at a pretty young age and kind of just scratching the surface. But Mark Wrace and I were talking about that. Corbin Carroll's, like, hot zone, if the pitches he can hit, is ridiculous.
Yeah. Yeah, and you know what else?
It kind of just feeds off of that, you guys. The vibe is great because there's a lot of confidence.
Yeah, exactly. And you know what it is? It's the star power that everybody was hoping to get from him, and he's delivering it. And that's a cool thing to see. And I brought this up yesterday. Asking Corbin Carroll to rotate outfield positions, that's a lot easier said than done, especially when you're in road ballparks and you've got to go and get acclimated to angles and the like and lighting and do it during batting practice. And he's making it look easy.
Yeah, you're right. And, you know, and these guys are pretty good at that, all of them out there. And we saw Lourdes Gurriel Jr. make a pretty good catch. But, you know, Lourdes Gurriel Jr., when he's out there, you know, he's not exactly like the same physical ability as some of those guys, Jake McCarthy and Corbin Carroll, Alec Thomas when he's up here. Hopefully he'll be back. And then Pavin when he's out there. But, you know, you watch Pavin and you're like, well, league average wise, like you can stick him out, but when you see him out there versus those other guys, it's difficult because they're just that good at it. They're just that good at making those adjustments and everything. And so for Corbin, yeah, a lot of this is all new. I'm sure he'll get out there early today. I mean, I was talking to him. I did kind of a long form interview with him that you guys will see later in the summer. And he talked about how it's not uncommon to hear a kid from Seattle say that Ichiro is his idol and he, you know, loved Ichiro, but Ichiro, he got to meet him in 2019 and it stuck with him that he said, your process has to be the same every day. You have to do the same thing every day. And that's what he does. And, you know, to get advice from a Hall of Famer like that, a guy like that, and to actually do that and have it be working for you. So it doesn't shock me. I'm looking forward to seeing what they can do the next few days. You know, Tommy Henry's on the mound tonight. He's turned quite a corner. These last five starts, he's got an ERA under 3. And so he's got a big week. He'll be pitching here tonight. He'll be pitching in his home region of Detroit with tons of friends and family later this weekend. So these young players are really pretty exciting for the Diamondbacks.
Jody Jackson, our guest here on the Arizona Sportsland. And I love that I get to ask this question because the Diamondbacks are in first place on June 6th and, you know, about 6 weeks away from the trade deadline, give or take. Bick and I have had the discussions. All right, what does this team need? It's a great question to ask because it means the team is relevant. If it's up to Jody Jackson, what are you adding at the deadline?
Well, it's a great question. I love to play GM. You know, I'm sure Mike Hazen loves this. But, you know, I do. Everybody looks for bullpen help, and they have every year, and most teams do when you're in contention. I think what they're doing right now has actually been impressive, despite, you know, what happened on Sunday. You know, Chafin has 8 saves. Castro has 6. Dre Jameson has 1. I mean, they've kind of spread it around. McGuff could be in that role. It's unique to do that, but that's kind of what you have to do when you don't have one guy that stands out. It literally is what matchup is best for those 3 batters that are coming up in the 9th inning. And for the most part, it's worked out very well. But as you guys know, every good team, really good teams, don't live on that 3-2, 4-2. You know, the other day it was 5-4. They don't live on that edge that much. And that's what's kind of doomed some Diamondbacks teams in the past is that they've been in so many close games that your bullpen can't sustain it. But the good news about this team is they usually have a couple more runs going into that 9th inning. So that's a beautiful thing. I think that possibly a starting pitcher, you know, I think that's something they could look at. But for the first time in a long time, guys, you look at the lineup, and it's pretty strong. Mm-hmm. You know, it's pretty strong. Marte, Carroll, Christian Walker, Mortiz Gurriel. You know, Rivera's been hot when he's been in there. Perdomo's at the bottom of the lineup, but he's been solid. Rojas has gone through some bumps. But, you know, so I think they're in pretty good shape there. Jake McCarthy is starting to hit again. That's great news. So, as always, I think it's just pitching and looking at what you could possibly get. And, you know, but again, and I think I might have even heard you guys talking about this last week, was, you know, you don't want to give up those top prospects. You want to see if you can, you know, do that and add some valuable pieces without doing that. And they've done that before, too. They've made some pretty shrewd moves over the years. So pitching, that's what I say, guys, as they try to maintain this race with the Dodgers.
All right, lastly, over the weekend, did you sense the team has turned a corner in terms of winning over casual fans in the Valley? Not just the attendance, but the buzz inside Chase Field. It seemed to be a cut above last weekend. Is that a good sign for this team?
Very good sign. I haven't really seen it like that in a couple years, certainly since 2019, and it was the attendance numbers were reaching those points and one of the higher ones even comparing to that year. And it was, there was a different energy. And it's funny, I said this on the air, my son had asked for tickets, for Friday night, and I was off Friday night, and I kind of had FOMO. I was kind of like, the Braves are coming in. So I asked my husband, I'm like, do you want to go? You know, my daughter, I'm like, well, I can get two more and then I can just roam around. And our friends were going, we had other friends that were like, hey, are you going? I was like, wow, everybody's like, you know, there's people really on board right now for this weekend series, and it was cool. And for me to go as a fan, I mean, I hadn't done that in years. It's kind of crazy. I don't know if you guys feel this way too, but your career, you just, like, the years fly by and you realize, I haven't just gone to a game and sat and just enjoyed it as a fan. And it was so enjoyable in every way. And it was cool to just see that vibe and that energy. And it was even a bigger crowd on Saturday and Sunday. So, you know, I mean, hopefully it continues. You just never know. But hopefully, as the stakes get higher, as the months go forward here, guys, we're still sort of in the beginning. We're in the middle of the season now, so I think so. I think that a lot of people really can get on board with the team that's got this much talent and energy, and they play hard every day.
Yep.
And you have to love that. Who can't get behind that?
4:05 first pitch today from Washington, 3:30 pregame. You can see it, of course, on Valley Sports Arizona. Jody Jackson, part of the crew there. You can hear it here on ESPN 620 in the Arizona Sports app. Jody, thanks so much for making some time for us this
morning.
Thank you,
Jody.
We appreciate it.
All right. Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Jody Jackson. Valley Sports Arizona, our guest on the Arizona Sports Line. Bick kicks off the second half of the Tuesday show in style with the blast. It's Bick Liamorata Mornings here on Arizona Sports, the local sports leader.